Welcome to Let Fear Bounce, the podcast that sheds light on the transformative power of overcoming fear. And dogs and coffee will more than likely creep into our conversations. So join me, Kim Langling, the host of Let Fear Bounce, as I chat with folks from around the world who share their inspirational stories and how they've turned their fear into fuel for a brighter future. You're going to hear from folks just like you and me. People who have navigated challenges and unleashed their personal strength to craft a life filled with fulfillment and joy. So are you ready to be uplifted, inspired, and motivated to conquer your own fear and bounce toward a life that you love? I know that I am. So grab your coffee, sit back, relax, and let's get this show started. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Let Fear Bounce. This is Kim Langling, your host, and I am so happy that you are deciding to spend just a small part of your day with myself and my special guest today, Dr. Avram Weiss. Now, I was so intrigued by his bio and what it is that he does and what his passion is, but he is a psychologist with over 40 years of experience practicing and teaching psychotherapy. Now, his work over the past decade has focused on understanding the internal lives of men and their intimate relationships. He is the author of 4 books, one of which is an award-winning book called Hidden in Plain Sight, How Men's Fears of Women Shape Their Intimate Relationships. I'm excited about this conversation. So Dr. Weiss, welcome. Welcome to Let Fear Bounce.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Okay. You know, we're going to jump right in. So as I said off mic, I was on your website, and folks, all of that stuff will be shared in the description notes. This is also going to be on YouTube, so you'll be able to find it in the description there. But there were 3 things that jumped in front of me. You had listed in one of your lectures that I was listening to online. Yeah. And I'd like to touch on them if we could. The 3 I would like to touch on, I'll share with the folks first, and then you can expound upon them. One is for men, of course, fear of women's emotions, fear of failing to protect their women, and fear of being trapped or controlled by women. Those 3 topics really jumped out at me for whatever reason, but could you share a little bit first about why you got into this realm of what you do and your psychotherapy practice, and then how it kind of veered you into the reasons men fear women?
Well, it started because I started working with a lot of men. And if you work with men, if you talk with men, not just as a therapist, but if in any context you talk with men, they talk a lot about women. And what they say about women a lot is they complain a lot about their partners, if you didn't know that. And the complaints are pretty similar, and they repeat. And so I would start to ask men a naive question. I would say, well, it's the kind of question that therapists are likely to ask. I would say, well, have you talked with her about this? And I got the same response again and again and again. And you might be able to guess. First, the first part of the response is they would look at me as if I had asked, as if I was the biggest idiot in the world, as if I had just asked the stupidest question in the world. They would be like, how could you ask that question? Of course, like it was the obvious thing. Of course I haven't talk with her about. That's why I'm here in your office. It gradually occurred to me that they hadn't talked with her about it because they were afraid to talk with her about it. And it became clearer and clearer to me that they were terrified to talk with her, that they had this whole long list of things that they were very, very bothered by and very upset about. In fact, I work with one guy who actually divorced his wife and never once said a word to her about this. He was so unhappy with these things about the marriage that he actually divorced without ever saying a word to his wife about the things he was unhappy about. And so it just became very clear to me that this was the case for many guys. And so I summoning my courage, I began to say to guys with, you know, a lot of trepidation, because it's not a thing that men like to hear. So I began to sort of very tentatively say to men, you know, it sounds like you're afraid to say these things to your wife? And again, the response was remarkably similar. First, they would bow up in a sort of like, clearly I had insulted them. But what was remarkable was how quickly that went away. Really less than a minute. And then how quickly you could just see it just go over their faces, how quickly they'd be like, oh, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And then from there, like things would just start to unpack. And so many things that had been puzzling and not made sense started to make sense. And it's sort of like we would go through back through the same territory that hadn't made sense and looking at it through this lens of that maybe you were afraid of her, everything that hadn't made sense started to make a lot more sense. And so it was like we were on this journey together, and it was a very exciting kind of journey to think about it through this lens. And so it became a sort of like, how could we have missed this? How could I have missed it? How could you have missed it? How could, you know, 1,000 other therapists have missed this? Because once you see it, you can't miss it. You know, once you sort of see this in heterosexual relationships, how could you ever have not seen it is sort of what ends up happening.
Yeah, that's fascinating. When you have someone outside your bubble,
yeah,
gently point something out, it just seems so clear. You know, you're just...
Right. Like, and oh, how did you
how
not,
did
see,
I
it?
Not see it?
Right. Right. Exactly. Right.
I'm just going to go by with the men that I know in my life. I think they would struggle to admit to any fear.
Well, that's how men are trained, is
how they're wired.
Never let them see you sweat, you know, don't. And of course, to not acknowledge any fear, but particularly. So like the worst insult that one man can hurl at another man. So my original title for the book, which was rejected by the publisher. But my original title for the book was Pussy Whipped.
And I'm sure many know what that term is.
Of course. So why is it that the worst thing a man can say to a man is that you're controlled by a woman? Well, really, if you think about what that means, it's not only not just controlled by a woman, but you're controlled by your need for a woman. You know, why is it, what are the dynamics involved that you have to have a woman's approval or you have to have sex with? Well, obviously it's more complex. Obviously it's more involved. Think about all the couples that are so involved in men feeling so bound by and so controlled by their need for sex with their partner. Obviously it's not just about having an orgasm. Obviously there's something more involved there, but that men put each other down by the worst thing they can think to say to a man is you're controlled by your need for a woman is a fascinating idea.
It is. Yes. Because, you know, well, as a female, I'm sitting here thinking that's not anything that would have ever entered my mind. For me, I'm like, well, they're just wired different. They think in singular topics and boxes in their brains. And I don't have boxes in my brains. I have many wires that are crossing over each other and many, many things going on all the time.
The science suggests we're not wired differently. We're trained differently. The science is pretty clear that we don't come out born that way, that that's training.
As it is with many things in life, such as, you know, all the divisiveness that's in the country right now. You're not born hating.
No, right. We're not born Democrats and Republicans.
Right. Right.
That's trained.
Exactly. Yes. Trained and learned. That is right.
Yes.
So there's a few that I had mentioned that could touch on the fear of women's emotions.
Sure.
I find that one. I want to hear a lot about this one.
I'm happy to tell you. So let me say it more precisely. It's not that men are afraid of women's emotions. It's that men are afraid of their own emotions, which are what gets stirred up when you get emotional. So what happens in conflict between men and women is women get more emotional, and then men start to feel more emotional when women get emotional, and men have less experience with their own emotions because they've been raised in a patriarchal culture in which they're taught to not be emotional. And so it's like, you know, for men, the analogy I use, it's like an away game, right? They're not on a home field. They're on an away game. And so they're on uncomfortable, unfamiliar turf. And so they want to make it a home game. So they try to get it back on home turf. So they try to suppress the emotionality because they're uncomfortable and feel disadvantaged. So they try to take the emotion out of the argument and control the expression of emotion, not so much to be controlling, to control the emotion, but they're not trying to so much control the emotion in you. They're trying to soothe their own emotions, which they don't know how to do in themselves. So they try to manage your expression of feelings because they don't know how to manage their own experience of emotion.
And what have you found with men that you've worked with? You know, when you point that out or when you explain that gently to them, how is it that they approach it? Do they welcome the thought of, oh yeah, you're right, or no, that's absolutely not me?
One of the biggest principles I have in working with men is that a lot of times, and therapists, I'm sad to say, that therapists are among the worst perpetrators at approaching men with a punitive rather than a positive approach. In fact, I frequently give talks to therapists in which I'm somewhat chastising of them about their negative approach in working with men. So, for example, in this case, therapists often sort of chastise men about this and sort of scold men about them not being emotional enough, about them not being comfortable enough with their feelings. I approach men in a much more positive approach. So what I point out to men is how much they're missing, how much they're missing out on. So I tend to work with men in groups with other men as a starting place. Oh. And so I help men learn how to be more comfortable with their own feelings in groups with other men, which are less threatening to them than in mixed, you know, like being with their partners is scary to them. And that's a hard place to learn, to start off learning how to be more comfortable with their feelings, whereas in groups with other men. So when a new guy comes into a group with me and other men, the men, you know, he'll say something like, wow, you know, I really don't know how to do this. And the other guys will say, don't worry about it. I didn't too. When I walked in here, I had no idea. You know, they're very supportive and reassuring and say, you'll get it. Don't worry. We all started here. We'll help you. You'll get the hang of it. As opposed to, what's wrong with you? You stupid jerk. Why can't you do this?
Right.
So that's sort of the progression that I work with is I tend to put men with other men. And in the book, there's a chapter for guys about how to find other guys who are interested in learning how to do this and form a book group, read the book together, work on this stuff on your own, and then you'll be ready to start experimenting with your partner. And a number of couples came up with an idea. It was not my idea at all, but what a number of couples have told me they've done, which I just think is a great idea. They buy the book and they read it a chapter at a time together. So in other words, they don't read ahead or they don't read the whole thing. They read chapter one and then they don't read ahead. They talk about chapter one. Then they read chapter two and they talk about chapter two. And I just think that's just a really lovely idea. And what the men say is that the book helps them to explain what they've had difficulty explaining to their partner. They say, see that example right there, that's what I've been. And the women are like, oh my God, I didn't understand. I had no idea. That's really. So I think that's just a great way to do it.
You continue to give lectures, correct? Do you travel doing that? Or do you have like an online platform that you regularly provide, you know, things like what we're talking about right now?
I don't have an online platform. I do sometimes travel and then I do some workshops online with other people's platforms.
The demographic of the men that you deal with, what's the demographic of them typically?
It's all over the map, all different ages, all different backgrounds. Mostly I'm working with men who never in a million years imagined they would be in therapy and are now very happy they are and very committed to it and get a lot out of it and are really glad they are.
Do you find, and I know you just said it's, you know, they're from all over the board. Do you find that most of them are, I don't know, younger, like 40 and under, or are they
all
40
ages.
And up?
All ages.
All, that's interesting to me.
You have to understand that men are largely isolated and really lonely and really very eager to have someone to be able to talk to. So when they see an opportunity, they're often pretty eager to take advantage of it. They have a lot to talk about. And when they see it and they're not being pushed into it, they're not that resistant.
It's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, from the other side of the coin as the female, it's very interesting.
Yeah. I think also that they understand pretty quickly that it's a male positive environment. That's not, you know, they're not being brought there to be punished or scolded or criticized.
Right. Right. So another one that we had talked about earlier was the fear of being able to protect.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So men are socialized to equate their value as a person with their ability to protect and provide for other people, particularly women and children. And so if your partner is distressed, that means that you are failing as a man. So if your partner is upset or distressed about something, it doesn't even have to be upset or distressed with you, because so this is why in so many conflicts in heterosexual relationships, the men often feel criticized, even when the woman is saying, "No, I'm not upset with you." The man often hears it as criticism or as failure or a statement of his inadequacy, because if she's upset, he's done something wrong. And the woman's puzzled because she's like, "This doesn't have anything to do with you. I don't get it." But he's hearing it as an indictment of his adequacy as a man. Because in our culture, we teach men that your performance, your adequacy is based on your ability to perform, to protect, to provide. This is why when men lose their jobs, they often fall into deep depressions, or when they retire. Because when they're not doing, when they're not providing, we teach them that they don't have, you know, their value is what they produce.
And so if they're not working, their value is diminished.
Or non-existent.
Yeah. When I've seen, like, you know, grandparents or older gentlemen that I know, when they retire, they're all excited about it, thinking, "Oh, I'm going to do this, going to do that." And then they seem kind of lost for a while.
They can. I mean, it depends on, I started a book that I'm not going to have time to write, but I was interested in about men's impaired capacity for pleasure and play. You know, men often have a lot of difficulty. You know, they can play if it's competitive, but just to be playful, to just play in a non-competitive, non-structured way is something that men often really have a hard time doing. You know, I love to see my grandchildren are 4 and a half. And I just came from there, actually. And I love to hang out with them because they're just, you know, you're just goofy. You know, you just hang out and be goofy.
Oh, I just became a first-time grandma.
Congratulations. It's
a
lot of fun.
Very exciting. Little yeah. girl. She's 4 months old now, and she's just starting to giggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when she did that, I went, "Oh, my goodness, you're brilliant."
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you get to go back into a very childlike place. You know, if you can go there inside yourself, you know, you can really reconnect with a delightful place in yourself.
Oh, absolutely. So you can see the world through their unfiltered eyes and all the awe and wonder that it is.
And men often, you know, have a hard time reconnecting with that part of themselves.
That was going to be one of my questions. Do you find that men do have a tough time reconnecting? And if so, have you found a reason why? I mean, or is it various reasons why, or is it how they were brought up?
No, it's absolutely, you know, kids, you know, when I was a boy, that's all we did was play. But then, you know, kids, little boys are faced with a very clear choice that if you want access to the world of power and privilege that is accorded to men, it's a forced choice. You can't still be a boy and be a man. Being a boy means foregoing all of that. It's a forced choice. And so, yeah.
So you have to work and you have to provide and you have to prove.
Yeah. In our culture, we define masculinity not proactively, but reactively. Masculinity is defined in our culture as not feminine, that which is not feminine. And so men are taught to be hypervigilant for any sign of anything that might be feminine, because the culture will turn on you immediately as evidence that you're not masculine. And so young men live in abject terror that any sign of anything feminine would show. But unfortunately, that includes warmth, tenderness, vulnerability, you know, a lot of things that are really good to have in your life.
Right.
And so then when they want to find an intimate partner, it's a tremendous conflict for them, because they're living in this hyper-competitive masculine world. And then how are they supposed to come over here and be tender? And it's a very schizophrenic split for them, which they have a lot of trouble maneuvering through.
And I've found, just with a few of the people that I know, a few men, not many, but a few of them, that they are in tune with their emotions and their vulnerability. And they're just the sweetest people. But when you see them in a group of other men, it's like they're a different person.
Well, they have to learn how to be. And it's consuming. I mean, it's very hard on them.
It would be tiring.
Well, this is why men have higher rates of cardiovascular disease, higher rates of depression. You know, all of these things reflect men live on average 7 years less long than women. I mean, these are all reflections of what we're talking about.
That's what I was going to mention and ask. Do you ever talk to the men that you work with about self-care?
That it's
not a luxury, it's a necessity.
Well, I tell them that they're getting the short end of the stick, that the values that they're following, they hear these things as things that their wives are demanding of them. And that's not a motivation to change. What I point out to them is that they're getting the short end of the stick. So, for example, when I work with young men, I say to them, you should get up in the middle. You should be the one who gets up in the middle of the night with your kid. And they're like, I got up in the morning, go to work. I'm like, no. Getting up in the middle of the night with your kid is the only unsupervised time you will have with your children. And they know exactly what I mean when I say that. They say, you should get up in the middle of the night because it's the only time you're going to have with your kids that is just yours. Because otherwise your wife will be supervising your parenting. So you should get up in the middle of the night because it's the best time you're going to have with your kids. You will love it. You will cherish it. You shouldn't do it to get your wife off your back. You should do it because, try it. You will love it. I promise you. Tonight, get up in the middle of the night with your kids. And the next time you see me, you're going to have a big smile on your face. Once you do it, you'll never give it up. You'll love it. So again, I'm going the positive route. Mm-hmm. Saying, once you do this, you know, this Saturday, tell your wife to sleep late and get up with the kids. You'll never give it up. You'll love it. Again, I'm not trying to sell them something. I'm not trying to guilt trip them into it. I'm telling you, you're getting the short end of the stick. You're missing out on when you go to work 60 hours a week. You're getting the short end of the stick. You're missing the best parts of life.
Yeah, true. How wonderful that there's someone out there like you that's figured that out and is sharing it.
Well, I figured it out the hard way. And I'm certainly not the only one who's saying this to young men. And I think they are figuring it out.
I think that's awesome. Well, you know, you're the only one I know, because it's not in my realm. It's not a topic I think about a lot, to be honest. That's what I think
if you spend time around young men, you'll see that they are not all of them, but a lot of young men are figuring out that they are getting the short end of the stick.
And I think that's wonderful, though. I'm glad that that's something that's on their radar now. So the next one that we had talked about was, and this was, I find, and you've touched on a little bit, the fear of being trapped or controlled by women. And you did touch on it a little bit, but can you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, men are taught to worry that women are trying to control them, because they're taught that they're supposed to be independent to the point of self-reliance and not let women try to control them. And of course, it's kind of ludicrous, because why would you think that a woman's trying to control you? And again, it's part of that whole patriarchal idea that you should be independent and self-reliant. And We're teaching men values which will guarantee them to be lonely and isolated and unhappy. And it's unfortunate because we're teaching men things that will guarantee them to be miserable.
And that's pretty heavy. I mean, wow. All you listeners out there, I mean, I hope you heard that. I mean, I hope you really heard what he just said. That loneliness. You can be incredibly lonely in a large group of people. I'm sure people, the listeners, have heard that saying. However, it's typically shared. But when you say loneliness, can you explain a little bit more about how the men feel lonely? Because I'm assuming that they're, like you just said, they're married or they're single or maybe they're divorced.
I don't mean loneliness as Friday night and I don't have a date. I mean loneliness like I've been married for 10 years and I'm sitting there, I'm looking at my wife and I feel like she doesn't even really know who I am. Mm-hmm. I've kept myself so distant from her that she doesn't really even know my most private, intimate thoughts. I mean that kind of loneliness.
Right.
Or, you know, I mean the kind of loneliness like I'm out at a bar with the guy who's supposedly my best friend and he has no idea of what really troubles me. I mean, that kind of loneliness, like there's nobody in the world that I really have shared my most troubling, intimate thoughts with. I mean, that kind of loneliness.
Mm-hmm. And that's a hard one for anyone.
It's not only a hard one. It's not just like, oh, gee, too bad. But we know that, for example, that loneliness is as big a risk factor for early mortality as smoking cigarettes. So it's not just like, oh, gee, too bad. It's actually going to cut your life short.
Right.
So it's serious stuff.
Yes, it is. Very heavy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, all of that can lead, like you just, you know, alluded to, that can lead to anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, over drinking, you know. Yeah. Addiction, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. And if we could just, you know, get to the root of it.
Yeah, and men are much more susceptible to it. And so, you know, I think one of the most important parts of the book to me is the part that encourages men to find other men to talk to, because I think that that's something that I certainly would like to be a part of, is helping men. So the groups that I do for men are very important to me. And I'm always looking for ways to encourage men to find other men to talk to, because I think that's really an important thing to happen.
Oh, I agree. Just, you know, just like with women, it's, you know, the same thing. A lot of times it's just much more comfortable.
Well, women tend to do it. Women have found ways to find.
Right.
Men, not so much. And so I really, you know, I want to be a part of helping men to find ways to connect with other men to talk with. So whoever's, you know, your listeners are, if there's one thing they would take away from this show, that's what I would like it to be for whoever the men listening, that they would find a way of connecting with other guys to begin some kind of conversation with.
And what a perfect segue. If you could share with the listeners where they can find this book of yours, because it sounds awesome, but where they can find the book and where they can find out more about you.
The simplest way to do both is on my website, which will be in your show notes, but it's Avram Weiss, PhD, which is AVRUMWEISSPhD.com. You'll find the book there. You'll find, you can also sign up for my mailing list. I write regularly for Psychology Today. I write some interesting and odd things. You sign up for the mailing list and you find the book there, and you'll get a free ebook if you sign up for the mailing list about relationships. And you can find all my books there as well.
And are your books available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
They are on Amazon as well, yes.
Okay, awesome, awesome. And also you had mentioned Psychology Today. I'm just, as you mentioned, I remembered that your articles have had, you know, not just thousands of views, but they've had millions of views.
Yes. Close to 2.5 million views.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, congratulations
Thank you. We were just talking about loneliness. Mm-hmm. The article I wrote about men's loneliness is close to 1 million views. So somebody thinks it's important.
At least 1 million people do.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That shocked me.
Isn't that amazing though? Yeah. When you see the numbers like that and you're going, oh, wow, I'm doing something right.
Somebody's paying attention to that.
Yes. Someone's paying attention.
Almost 1 million views. Yeah.
How awesome. Well, Dr. Weiss, thank you so much for being
my pleasure.
This has it's been very enlightening, and I appreciate everything you're doing, and I appreciate your time today. So thank you.
My pleasure. I enjoyed talking with you.
And everybody out there, I hope that you grabbed on to a few nuggets. And oh my goodness, speaking of nugget, Dr. Weiss, you have to toss out a nugget of hope to my listeners. I almost forgot.
The time I feel most, well, it's going to be about men because I work with men and I am a man. The time I feel most hopeful. So my son and daughter-in-law, he didn't do it by himself, have two twin, lovely 4.5-year-old boys, twins. And the time I feel most hopeful about the world is when I go to visit them and they're with their friends and there are children everywhere. You know, they go group of kids. And almost 100% of the time when a kid cries or needs attention, it's one of the dads who gets up to look after the kids. And I think, okay, the world might be changing.
Thank you so much for that nugget. That was lovely.
Yeah, it is. Every time it happens, it...
Oh, I know. It just fills your heart, doesn't it? Yeah.
The world in that way, because I remember when I had my kids, there were no changing rooms. There were no changing stations in men's bathrooms. And I remember the first time I took my oldest, my firstborn, who is that son, into a McDonald's, and there was a changing table in a McDonald's bathroom. And I literally cried. I thought, oh my God, you know?
Yeah.
They finally think that a father might actually change a diaper.
Right. Right. Part of that thing, how we were raised.
Yep.
It's been that way forever, huh? Goodness. Well, thank you so much for sharing your bits of wisdom and for your nugget of hope. And yes, oh my goodness, children provide those little glimpses of hope. They help us to see the world as we should.
They are the hope.
Yes.
They're the only hope we got.
They are the hope, indeed. Indeed. All right, Dr. Weiss, thank you so much once again. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.
You too.
And everybody out there listening, thank you so much for tuning in with me. Each episode uploads on Wednesdays. Let Fear Bounce. I am your host, Kim Langling. Everybody be well, stay well, and be blessed. Thanks so much for joining me on Let Fear Bounce this week. New episodes upload each Wednesday, folks, so be sure that you subscribe on one of your favorite platforms that you listen on. Also, we're on YouTube, so hop on over to YouTube, folks, and subscribe there. I appreciate your support, and I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you. You are amazing. Have a beautiful day. Everybody be well, stay well, and be blessed.